Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mining Now. Today, we have HE Parts International on the show. We have their general manager at HE Parts Cooling Division, Andrew Murray, on. We have Scott Satch. He is the national technical manager at HE Parts Cooling Division. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Nice to be here.
We've been doing a lot of episodes across Australia, and I feel there's some competition for best background, and you, HE, is taking a serious run at it. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. The guys have done a great job in the workshop moving those around. You can see sort of key products we've got in the background there. There's a bar and plate cooler, a service job for a 793F, and in the background on the wall, a safety message, which is always critical for our guys on the shop and on site.
Yeah, it's perfect. Sorry, the orange one, everybody will learn really quick that you're the experts, not me. What did you say the orange one in the is?
The orange one to my left is a 793F truck radiator. Okay. And on the right-hand side, that's a 6060 digger radiator assembly.
Nice. Can you both, maybe Andrew, start with you and then go to Scott. Can you just sort of your roles within the company, just expand on them a little bit more?
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Jared. I'm the general manager for Australia and moving globally. So we've got five branches around Australia: Perth, Kalgoorlie, Adelaide, Mackay and Rutherford. They're in all the key mining jurisdictions. So my role day to day is, one, keeping people safe, manage those branches, managing client relations and sort of the growth trajectory of the company. I'll pass over to you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you. And my role, I'm national technical manager for the division. So I sit over things like scopes of works, customer quotes, supplier revisions, what we're doing day to day on their floor, looking along with the engineering department and basically making sure that what we're doing is best practice, future facing, so that our clients really get the benefit of the world-class best products that we're producing and repairing.
Scotty's been really modest. He's been in the business 30 years and knows everything about every radiator that comes and goes. So he's my left and right hand man, you could say, with any curly questions.
Right. Well, that's probably a good matchup then. I wanted to get an understanding right off the bat where HE comes in, where HE Parts comes in to the process. So there's a fleet. Let's say there's a new fleet that lands on site for a company. At what point will HE Parts get involved with that fleet, as an example?
HE Parts is a global company, right? We've got several divisions, mining that does wheel groups and engines, crushing, which is fixed plants, engines and engineering. So we're typically an alternative to the OEM, or we fix problems for clients. That's our DNA, essentially, is if there's a pain point for a client in performance, engineering, installation, safety, that's where we tend to get involved. Once a machine's been on site for, say, one engine life, potentially it can't be supported, parts, we have engineering capability, several engineers that we can design, improve functionality of equipment, really. That's where we fit. That's our core benefit or core competitive advantage, is that we're agnostic as well, so we can service all OEM fleet machines and stock up on those high volume machines to support clients that way. I'll pass to you, Scott, and add your thoughts.
Yeah, so on top of that, the three points that we try and strive towards, we very much do service and repair of clients' own equipment, so they can take that off the truck or off the dozer, send that into us and get their own iron rebuilt. We try and offer service exchange for any of the high volume type items, and that's very advantageous to a client because we've got a fully rebuilt 0-hour component. We can ship it to the client's site. They can simply pull their used component off, minimal downtime. Or the third option is that in many cases, we've got a new improved engineered product that we've manufactured ourselves. So that can be new out to the client's site as well.
Does everybody do it differently? Well, not everybody, I guess. Some people, of course, do it the same. But I'll ask it in a different way. What are the different people, the way that people approach their servicing or their service exchange programs?
Yeah, so I suppose it's, like I said, we can service multiple machines and OEMs, whereas a major tier one miner may have a certain fleet that goes to one OE for repair. we can support them across the range of machines they have on site. And as Scott was saying, I think we've got 70 cores nationally worth about $3 million, $8 million worth of stock. So we're not shy to really support our customers. And that's a point of difference, right? We're agile, stock various machine components, design them, and yeah, just really service the client's needs. That's our focus.
Let's talk about our heavy industry world tour brought to you by Savannah Equipment, supplying mining equipment worldwide. We are heading to events across North America and Australia and filming episodes on location. Email us at info@crownsman.com to be part of Crownsman's Heavy Industry World Tour. Your partner in technical services, AMPS, have been industry leaders in technical services optimization systems and training since 2011. With a team of over 70 resource professionals, AMPS provides world-class support to mining technical services teams globally. AMPS builds the capabilities within teams on-site to maximize results and unlock value in mining operations. With significant experience in operational underground and open pit engineering and geology, AMPS is passionate about delivering value to their clients across an array of professional services. If you're looking to improve your mine site's technical services, visit advancedmps.com or email partner@advancedmps.com today. Your trusted partner of choice, Bestech Engineering, is excited to announce that they have acquired Spencer Engineering. This allows Bestech to add mine hoist expertise to their existing suite of services, including mining, power, electrical, instrumentation and automation, mechanical and structural divisions. This diversification will offer clients the highest level of service and value for their projects. Don't miss out on this exciting new chapter of engineering excellence. Reach out today at bestech@bestech.com to learn how Bestech can help you.
So I think what I'd like to do now, if we could, and maybe whoever wants to kick off, I know both of you are going to contribute to this section. So I just want to break down what you're actually offering clients, right down to the parts you're putting together for them, more expansion on the service, how it all fits together in their operations. So I guess let's just start with the actual parts.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Jared. So our bar and plate product is an aluminium cooling product, essentially. It's our core classic product line. It provides massive, exactly, back right-hand side of my shoulder. So it's got massive features and benefits. It's a heavy-duty bar and plate configuration. Corner block, we reinforce the corner block, engineered design for improvements, anodized cores, really improve performance for our customers. And extend the service life, because what any client doesn't want is unplanned maintenance in between their maintenance cycle, right? So we really, our key performance is to reduce those maintenance outages. We custom design piping systems to fit into existing structures and configurations, which we work with clients to get best fit. And then the increased product life. So it's fully welded aluminium bar and plate and a robust solution for many cooling applications. Obviously, aluminium has excellent cooling properties as well.
Yeah. So one of the advantages that we have as a company, because there is obviously other companies participating in this space as well, is that the cooling division came together through the acquisition of probably premium radiator shops across Australia. Mm-hmm. And predominantly they were service shops. And the advantage that provided was actually being able to see what works in the field and, more importantly, what doesn't, what causes failures. And by passing that feedback back through our engineering company, a lot of those features and benefits that Andrew was talking about become our day-to-day offering, if you like, and are automatically built into the product. So we're using higher grades of aluminium to resist corrosion. We talked about anodizing. There's expansion facilities. And products like here, you'll actually notice that the two parts of the core are bolted together. Mm. That's simply to address cracking issues that were in the original design. And so by looking at what really works in the field, using those five branches that we've got to keep on taking that information in and provide back to the engineering, we get this, you know, whole 360 continuous improvement that we, you know, are able to invest into our products.
You clarified something that I was going to ask you to expand on, that this, when you're coming in, you're not just replacing what was there. There's a lot of different levels of actually improving it. Like when you say the components you're using are, you know, less resistant to, or more resistant to corrosion, I should say, that is different than what the original OEM provided on that unit. Is that right?
correct?
Absolutely. We get an opportunity because there has been failures in one way or another. It hasn't met life. There's benefits of expansion, contraction. Obviously, we're working in a heating and cooling environment. And the key components, so we're looking at charge air coolers, oil coolers, hydraulic oil coolers. That's the space that this Core Classic product line operates. And that's, as I said before, that's agnostic. That's across OEM. So it's CAT, Komatsu, Liebherr. We can provide an offering or work with clients to solve their problems.
Do the clients know their problems when they're coming to you? Is it always pretty clear, or is there a certain amount of communication before, like, let's say something has been going wrong with one of their units? Is it a failure of the unit? Is it sometimes how they're servicing it? What are sort of the scenarios that you find?
There's a consultation piece, right, where sales are the interface of the company, and they're talking to clients daily and obtaining information. What are their pain points, whether it is life, performance, and that's where the process starts. And then those components get passed to our engineering team to look at and potentially improve. And if the fleet or the number of machines nationally or globally is big enough, we've got no problem stocking and backing our product in. We offer extensive warranties on those products, so up to 2 years. And rarely see failures. So we really, like I said, back our product in and really believe it's a excellent solution.
And the two issues that the clients generally see fall into two categories. Number one, it leaks. Don't really know why it just leaks. Or number two, it overheats and don't really know why it just overheats. Mm-hmm. And that's where we kind of sort of step in and sort of say, well, if it's leaking, there has to be a reason, and we need to understand what that is. Otherwise, we're just going to create a problem that leaks as well. So if we're not sure, we're probably not going to be the first to market. But when we go to market, it's going to be right. And we're going to make sure that we've got a product there. Quite often we'll open up the core and make it look less cooling efficient than what the original one did. But what that did was address potentially a blockage issue that was coming from the outside. So the original cooler was fine, but it gets blocked in service all the time, which leads to the overheating. Get rid of the blocking problem, no longer overheats, and client's got a solution. So as long as the item works correctly, we don't tend to hear from the customers as much. But when they do have an issue, they know what the cause is, what the outcome is, but they don't necessarily know what's causing that to be the problem.
And what's interesting, this equipment's operating some pretty extreme environments, right? 50 degrees in the Pilbara, underground gold mines, coal on the East Coast. So there's potentially a different solution for different regions or issues that we can really help with.
Orica Digital Solutions seamlessly connects customers' physical and digital worlds so they can readily understand and optimize operations at every step of the value chain, from exploration to processing. Whether deployed individually or as a whole, Orica Digital Solutions technologies deliver intelligence for open cut and underground mines to make more precise and faster decisions. With a complete, timely, and accurate picture, operations can adapt to improve safety, drive productivity, reduce costs, and environmental impacts. To learn more about Orica Digital Solutions, visit orica.com/digital solutions today. Hexagon's technology and solutions enable stakeholders across the mining industry to make better decisions faster. Get smarter integrated cloudware, sensor software solutions, and in-field apps that connect mines to boardrooms in real time. Hexagon offers safer, autonomous, more sustainable open pit and underground mining solutions spanning exploration and planning, safety and operations. Visit hexagon.com/mining or email info.min@hexagon.com today. Hey, mining enthusiasts, registration for CIM Connect 2024 Vancouver from May 12th to 15th is now open. Last year, this convention had over 6,800 participants from 60 countries, with 1,796 delegates, 702 booths, and 320 presentations. Secure your spot and register now at convention.cim.org. CIM Connect 2024, where quality and innovation define the experience.
You. I was going to ask that question. You beat me to it, and now it makes
great minds, Jared. And then even pushing into Canada and globally, then -10 up there, 50 here. They're very different, aren't they?
I still want to ask my question. No,
we're happy to roll out the same answer.
I was going to just ask how much the different environments. What came to my mind is even like these mixed fleets, or if people are maybe even having multiple sites, so they're moving equipment from one site to the other, or they're buying new, they're buying a new equipment line, but maybe that equipment hasn't worked in that type of environment. Are you seeing those types of things where the equipment Absolutely. Was fine over here, but now it's going into this environment and it can't stand up anymore?
You're describing the two major mining areas of Australia right now with that question. So on the East Coast, we've got a lot of coal mining. On the West Coast, it's predominantly iron ore and metalliferous mines. When we have a look at the difference in those products, coal particularly, very abrasive, very corrosive when it gets wet, big chunky stuff. The miners over there are looking for a more open type arrangement. They're also closer to service facilities and things like that. When we move on to the west coast of Australia, the mines can be 3,000-4,000 kilometres away from the major service centre in Perth. So that reliability piece, 0 hours, far more important as a driver to the miner on the west coast of Australia. So they're very much commodity specific products.
Absolutely. And I'd say leveraging those comments, Scott, we also work with our tier one miners, mid-cap miners, and even the major contractors. So they've also all got different priorities. Like I said, the tier ones are maintenance driven, 0 hours, reliability. Major contractors can tends to be cost driven, right? They're using their machines per hour. They don't want any downtime that way. So there's different levers we pull for clients to get the best outcome for them.
The other thing that came to my mind is, do you ever do enough updates on them that like, and then like 5, 6, or 10 years later, you start to see that the new radiator system on the new products is like trying to match you to like resolve all these issues. Cause I would imagine the tier ones are then going saying, hey, this issue got fixed. Why aren't these new vehicles? Why don't they have it on there?
Yeah, I think that's a challenge, right? The new vehicle has a warranty and an initial engine life, and it takes a while for them to find the pain point or issues they want to resolve and prioritize those. So we're always working with them. New fleets, you'd expect to have improvements or maybe region site specific enhancements, whether it's autonomous. We retrofit autonomous kits on the radiators that require that on the for the tier one. So there's all slight different tweaks to customer expectations, which our service repair and workshops are fully capable of putting into the bill of materials. Scotty helps a lot with those, making sure it's fit for each specific client.
Greatest compliment I think that you can have when you're an aftermarket repairer and solution provider like HE Parts is actually have an OEM come to you and either ask you for assistance or copy your product. And we have both of those. So we've got ongoing relationships with several OEMs that we support with products to get them into markets that they couldn't normally operate their equipment in. High trash environments where their original cooling packages will give issues. And through our engineering team and our product development, we've been able to find solutions that allow them to change out a cooling item and then sell new equipment. And so I think, like I say, that's reflective of the strength of the engineering team.
I was curious about the communication side of it. What is the environment you're going into like when you're talking? And we'll go through the different ones, the tier ones, the contractors. How is that communication done? How is it kept collaborative as opposed to, they're high pressure, it's big money at stake. Everybody that you're talking to, I'm sure, is getting pressured from somewhere else. How do you navigate that individually and as a company?
Absolutely. As a company, we're a broad ranging company. Like I said before, we've got several divisions all vying for market share in their specific space. Cooling specifically, we deal with a multiple of stakeholders, right? From guys on site that just want their machines moving dirt, to the corporate guys that are looking to reduce cost. And it's data driven. We've got a great marketing team that rolls out our case studies, data sheets for our new products that we've developed. So that's key for us, is really solid data on improvement and improving engine performance, cooling performance, life. And that talks to a multiple of stakeholders in any company, right? Whether it's a tier one, a contractor, or a mid-cap miner, they're all looking to increase production and reduce costs, and we can help in those areas.
And then from the technical support, what does that look like? The right down to the communication cycle, and in this show, there's sort of the zoom out and zoom right in to those you know, over those weeks when a product needs to come online and they're, you're back and forth and identifying, communicating what their issues are, asking them for information, you know, that whole process that you need to go through.
So HE at its scale, we've been very beneficial in there's a quite significant ERP system inside HE. And we also have tied to that quality documents that actually run per part number. So if we find an innovation, for instance, in our Rutherford workshop, because they've seen a certain number of failures, we've been able to get the benefit of understanding what it's going to take to repair that. We'll build that into our documentation system. And then the very next time that that job's done anywhere in Australia, the documentation pack prints out and it actually mandates that these repairs need to be done or these upgrades. So even before the customer in a different jurisdiction knows that there's a problem with that particular one, the branch that they're getting that item repaired at is automatically doing that repair as a minimum standard. So that's the communication piece internally.
Wow.
Externally, we find that, you know, our ladies and gentlemen that deal firsthand with the customers, our estimators and our salespeople, when they're talking with the clients on site about the problems and about just the general repairs that are coming in, we very much understand that although Australia is a very large place and it's got a very big mining community, there's actually a relatively small number of players in there that will move from different places. And they take that knowledge with them that, hey, these are the tier one solution providers. These are the guys that fix problems on site. These are the guys that don't let me down, as opposed to potentially there are other repairers that we could use. And so we find that by building relationships, particularly over the long term, and we're quite fortunate that a lot of our key people have been in the business for many, many, many years, those reputations and those relationships that they've built on site continue to draw the interest and the inquiry back into the business.
Have you noticed a jump? We'll talk especially with the tier ones, but even it trickles down to the contractors as well. But with you know, pressure from, you know, ESG goals and things like that, and just general efficiency, has it really ramped up the demand? Have you noticed a spike in just them asking for more and more from HE, but also just sort of a willingness to even move faster to sort of hit their goals as well?
Yeah, I think you become a stakeholder. You come once you're in, it becomes a relationship, not transactional, once we're this,
right.
This industry, right? So we're supporting them, they support us. We talk about problems they're experience, we provide a solution. So I think those ESG goals, it's not their problem, it's everyone's problem at the moment. So we need to all work together to hit those goals. I'd say the beauty of the cooling division is a hell of a lot of recycling can go through. We use a lot of copper, aluminium. We can really reduce our footprint that way. We're cooling the planet, essentially. That's what we're trying to do in the next till 2030 and beyond. So we've been really engaged with key players in those future facing industries and the energy transition, being able to support those transitions, really, from whether it's from diesel to electric or hydrogen. We're heavily involved in those design process. We've supplied components for a few of the key players there, and definitely provided designs for retrofit kits to change fleets. We're looking at, because I don't think they're going to keep up by just supplying a whole new fleet of electric vehicles. There's going to be a retrofit or an alternative coming, right? So we're very well placed with our engineering, got really robust supply chains that work with our engineers. So that's been a key benefit. And going back to your previous question around the communication, a lot of it's around transparency both ways, right? So getting a really good grasp on the problems or their priorities and us being able to solve them. And that comes from every level of the business. As Scott said, the workshop guys talking, guys on site, sales interacting, and that's a regular interaction. And that goes throughout the business. I think there's going to be a competitive advantage in some areas with our service exchange, having those units on the ground to turn around quickly and keep clients' machines running.
So I just wanted to clarify on that service exchange. Is that swapping? So you're taking one part, putting in a new part, and then going in
exactly right
the old one,
right? Yeah, so potentially a client will have a broken radiator or a radiator that needs servicing, something similar to the 793F at the back. They'd send us the one out of the machine, we'd send them a new one ready to go, ready to install, so that machine has minimal downtime. Rather than waiting the 4 to 6 weeks to repair the unit, they'll have one sent, 0 hours, install, machine can be running next day, really.
So a lot of the truck fleets, obviously the big thing is getting an engine secured. You're not going to wait around to pull an engine out, get it rebuilt, get it sent back to site. So if you've got the engine sitting on site before you start the rebuild, maybe 2 days to, pull that out and get a new component in there. That doesn't really give you a long time to get a radiator component properly rebuilt. So the advantage of service exchange is we're on the ground at the same time the engine and the other major components are. In fact, all the components can be sitting there before you, stand that truck down. So there's no hold up and delay. So the real advantage is not going to get a surprise when you pull it out and find that parts aren't available or there was something more wrong with it than what you thought. The tyranny of distance and losing time in freight, it sits there and your truck's back up and running in the minimum, possible time. So the one on the left hand side of me is a perfect example of that happening. 793F radiator, fully rebuilt, ready to go. So it'll go up to a mine site in Western Australia, and that will save that 2 or 3 days of transit each way, plus a week, 2 weeks to rebuild that item.
And our other divisions obviously support that as well, being engines and mining solutions that supports those other critical components, wheel groups, engines, radiators. It's the end-to-end package of a haul truck.
So just to clarify, when you're scaling and expanding your global presence, is it what are the challenges? Are you able to bring that same level of service? Is everything that's in Australia coming with you to these new areas?
Absolutely, Jared. So we've got really strict work instructions in Australia that ensure the same quality of workmanship is delivered from each branch. And we're leveraging those work instructions and products globally to ensure that there's a flow-on effect. So they're getting that same standard, whether it's Australian branch, Canada, the US, Peru, it's that same high standard of work, which our tier one clients expect globally. Scott may be able to elaborate. He's done a lot of the work on the work instructions and bill of materials to support that.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. So, we've currently got a plan in place where we're moving the global engineering documents from being on an Australian register up to being in our global document register. And so the advantage of this is, as we discussed before, when something has an innovation because it's driven by a particular branch in Australia, and then we get that innovation right through Australia, that same system is now, spreading out with fingers, if you like, to our other repair facilities. And we're making sure that those same documents, which are all controlled by our engineering center of excellence, are then available in all of the other centers. So from day one, if you get a 785C radiator rebuilt in Australia for a tier one miner, and they say, we want that done in the US, that will be exactly the same minimum standard of work done in that facility on the very first rebuild.
I started adding in this little section to a lot of the interviews because I realize I ask a whole bunch of questions, and I always imagine now that there's probably someone sitting there going, can you just ask this? I need to know.
And you're missing. We need to do this live next time, Jared, and let's get the audience involved.
Exactly.
Right?
It's too risky, trust me. but what are some common questions or even misconceptions people have about HE Parts? That just get thrown at you.
Yeah, the business was built through acquisition. So we're really pushing our brand hard. All divisions were built through acquisition and branded HE Parts. So that's probably a common misconception, is that people still refer to cooling division as Core Cooling, Crushing Solutions as CME. So it's really important to leverage the history of the company and, push forward with the HE Parts brand and that holistic solutions.
And what about technical support, or is there any conversations that you're still having? I mean, especially when you're pushing, trying to get stronger in new markets, what are some of those new market questions that you're going to field?
Well, the key with that is we've proven a lot of these concepts, right? We've proven in tough conditions in Australia, in mining environments. So I can understand from those expansion areas that people are resistant sometimes to bringing on new vendors or suppliers. But what we can do is proof of concept, proof of performance in some of toughest mining regions globally, that we can provide that data and give confidence straight away that our products are going to perform on site and get the required life.
Scott, Andrew said you've been in the industry for 30 years. Is that industry as in the radiator, the cooling industry specifically?
Well, actually 30 years continuous service with this business and the prior business that was acquired.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah, a little bit over 30 years in the industry, radiator industry, but 30 years continuous service here. Yes.
Wow. How much have you seen change? And the other question is, how much has stayed the same? You know, mining, it's still big equipment, still big gear, still lots of maintenance, all these things that are still the same. So I like to ask it both ways because both are as true sometimes.
So I'm going to turn it around slightly and say what stayed the same, first of all, is okay. Change. Nothing has really stayed stagnant over that period of time. Things have just continued to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
The design of radiators and cooling systems has definitely changed to a more modular design. If I go back 30 years, much smaller because the equipment was smaller, a lot of solder up type stuff and bolt together type things. Typical radiator would come into the radiator shop and a mum and dad type radiator repair outfit would, resolder some parts and put a coat of paint on it and send it back. And that was considered a rebuild. Mm. In today's day and age, that no longer is the standard. The components are running in machines that have got, up to 600 tons for a fully loaded mobile truck. We can't afford to take a risk with that. That's a lot of downtime if that component needs to be rebuilt again. So if I said the biggest change in the industry is the professionalism with which things are rebuilt, because we're going to a much, much higher standard than what were done, 15, 20 years ago. And that's really a big influence of HE Parts. We talk about innovation, not duplication, total cost of ownership and the advantage to the customer. And that really, I suppose, strikes an accord with my DNA and certainly that of the business.
Does the production that these units are just getting bigger and bigger all the time, does that ever cause a challenge in the manufacturing side for you, actually putting together the product lines? Or is it just in your particular part of the business, is it pretty scalable for what's required?
It's definitely scalable, but it does provide challenges in terms of the workshops, because eventually you get to the stage where the height of the overhead cranes isn't big enough, and the lay down area in the floor isn't big enough, and the spray booths that were once well and truly big enough are no longer wide enough. You need to upgrade your forklifts and that sort of stuff. So. Yeah. Yeah, without doubt, as the equipment has got bigger over time, that has been something that we've had to continue to increase the business to be able to manage. And I suppose at the same time, we've probably let go of and moved out of the space where we originated from, which has been automotive and very light industrial, agricultural type radiators. Not to say that we couldn't do it, but it's just not our target area. And because we're scaled towards, large, heavy mobile earth moving equipment, that's where our absolute focus is.
Andrew, I wanted to ask you just to sort of close things off, and not in a shameless plug way, but in a genuine question that I have is, when you're pushing into these new markets, and I'll spin it around for us, when we're going in to do these episodes in Australia, we have a pretty good understanding of what value we offer. We don't have, drones and stuff flying all over. We it's all about asking the right questions and getting to the core of the companies that we're featuring. So we understand what our edge is. When you're expanding into these new markets, where do you have the confidence that HE Parts is going to come into that market and you just know you're going to have an edge in that particular market, whether it be the US or the Canadian or Peru or wherever it is you're going after?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jared. In those markets, they are OE dominated, right? So initially we provide an alternative where potentially there hasn't been one in the past, and that's for performance, an agile solution, engineering, where potentially there's no bespoke solutions yet for that market. Mm. What we can do is preempt some questions, right? Because we know where machines have failed in the past in hard conditions. So whether that's a D10, D11, haul truck, digger, we know their common failure methods, can be on the front foot and talk to clients and say, have you experienced these issues? Are you seeing them? Do you have a solution? Here's some data or case studies where we've had success before. Mm. And we've got global like I said, robust supply chains. We're a big company that's not afraid to back ourselves in and put stock on the shelf, and that's a solution for a customer, right? They need it ready, they need it available to minimize that downtime. So, and we're passionate about what we do. Like Scott said, innovation, not duplication, that's the DNA. And we've got branches and facilities globally. So we've got that support there. And quite often, tier one miners are global as well, right? So if they've had a positive relationship with us in Australia, that should be leveraged reasonably easily around the world for other sites.
Right. Actually, I wanted to ask quickly about the supply chain. I love doing this. One more question. But I will have one more.
Keep them coming.
Well, at least people know that I'm genuinely interested in the companies being featured. And someone asked me that the other day, like, how do you stay engaged? I said, well, all the companies are different. And this is what I grew up. I grew up around mining equipment. So, you know, I'm not interested in, I did like a food review interview a few years ago, and I just absolutely hated it. So I'm genuinely interested. And the supply chain side of it, for you, is that, you know, even over the couple of years of COVID and now in this environment, has that sort of, did HE run into challenges with it, or through those times and even now, are you able to keep that supply chain pretty consistent?
Yeah, obviously that was a crazy time a few years ago, and we just had to back ourselves in and get stock on the shelf at any cost to support clients. Few companies got a bit overweight in that time, and supply chains normalized, so there's still stock there. Mm. We're not, it's machine specific, right? We've got the data on machine populations, so it aligns with that very closely, and it's all, the supply is very strictly controlled by engineering QA/QC. So right, customers have confidence that way as well.
Okay. So that it's been pretty smooth then for you. Scott, just one quick question about either one of you could answer again on that supply chain side. I was in the construction industry in 2008, 2009. What you saw is that it went from a lot of, it was overstocking. Everybody just had tons of supplies. You never waited for anything. And even now, still, you have to order parts and pieces. It never really got back to the same as it used to be. Has that changed? Did that happen in mining as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably a little bit later on. It wasn't so much 2008, 2009. It was going more into the global mining downturn, which was circa 2012, 2013 in Australia.
Yeah.
So probably people didn't necessarily stock up, but you know, some of this stuff has got a bit longer lead time. By the time you've got your raw materials together, get parts from two or three suppliers, and then bring it all together in Australia, build the item, package it, and that sort of stuff. So where it got tricky for us was that more or less the sales definitely declined through that period of time. So anyone that's been around the mining industry long enough knows that it just runs like this. It doesn't have right. a nice flat line or a curve or anything like that. So you'll never get it perfectly right. Hopefully you never get it terribly wrong. But as Andy said, one of the strengths of this business is that it does hold sufficient stock that it can cover the dips in, and we've got good enough visibility of the future most of the time to be able to prevent a stock out because of an issue occurring, whether that be freight or whatever else might be occurring. And so we tend to run a pretty reasonable inventory system with some analysts that are looking over that all of the time for us in the ERP system. And so we're pretty well covered on the ground for most of the popular items. Some of the very slow moving items, you don't hold a lot of that on the shelf. History seems to repeat itself where you'll sell nothing for 6 months and then you'll get three orders, back to back. Those are the ones that really probably challenge us the most. But, we're not a long lead time to put things back on the shelf.
Right.
Those sorts of things we can prioritize, and within a few weeks, we're normally back to stock again.
Because you're actually building them there. So you actually have that flexibility if it needs to happen.
Absolutely. And what I would say is cyclical. Like Scott said, it's a cyclical industry where miners have increased stock levels to counter COVID. That's starting to reduce now. There's a bit more pressure on costs and things like that, but we work with it. And in contract terms, there's sunset clauses, so we're more than happy to hold stock for customers with some confidence that's going to turn.
And you have, and HE Parts has that scale to actually be able to do that, which is another big competitive advantage, right?
Absolutely. And one of our other key divisions, Domex, is a global sourcing division, essentially, that looks at existing fleet, purchasing existing fleets. And we use those guys really well to source hard-to-get items or common items. And then they either we turn them internally or they open up for the market, for the global market.
Well, gentlemen, I won't keep saying one more question. I really do appreciate your time and did enjoy it. I feel like sometimes these conversations, once I get going, I realize I could now go regroup and probably have a whole other list of questions because now I actually have a better understanding of the cooling division. So, but I do thank you for sort of scoping that out. And it's also important. I'm glad we got to talk a little bit about the expansion and some, you know, I can't talk right now. I'm glad we got to talk about the expansion and specifically about some of your capabilities. And I hope we do it again. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks very much, Jared. Awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. It's great. Exciting time for the division and the company.
Yes. Okay, and thank you, everybody, for watching. We will have links to I cannot say that today. I can hear the producer, Mubarak, laughing off the screen. We will have links to HE Parts Cooling Division in the description. We'll also have links to their LinkedIn, to Andrew and Scott, if you want to connect with them. Go check everything out. Thanks for watching, everybody. We will see you on the next episode of Mining Now.